Welcome to the Sin Bin. This is Penalty Box Radio.
Three-time Best Sports Blog winner.
With Justin Bradford.
Two-time Toast of Music City Best Sports Reporter.
Big Ben.
Most famous belly in Smashville.
And Glenn Blackwell.
Brought to you by E610 Athletes.
Penalty Box Radio is on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. USA Soros is exempt from the expansion draft, and it's Matthias Ekholm, not Matthias Elkholm. This is Justin Bradford coming to you with Glenn Blackwell and our guest host in studio tonight, Daniel Lavender of Admirals Roundtable, here all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Daniel, welcome.
It's really great to be in studio and not just on the phone. And boy, I've already loved my time here in Nashville. The food's so good.
It is.
It's amazing.
Yeah, tonight.
We took him to Monell's.
A lot of southern food there. Lots of mac and cheese, too, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he got his cheese fill.
Yeah. Just stereotypical Scotty. Just get my cheese.
Get your cheese. Get my cheese. So we have lots of hockey to talk tonight. So first, we're obviously going to talk about the Predators game last night. A thrilling loss in overtime. Yeah. But then Mark Moser, who is the Avalanche radio play-by-play announcer, will join us in the second segment. And then we're going to talk to Daniel in the third segment just to talk about the Milwaukee Admirals, everything going on there, and his time here in Nashville. And then obviously we'll close up with the Twitter questions that we always do. And boy, we got some good ones to discuss tonight.
We are ready.
So let's go ahead and jump into last night's game. Nashville Predators against the Calgary Flames, which usually a Tuesday night Calgary-Nashville game doesn't see many goals, usually a little bit slower. And Billy Ray Cyrus was there recording for his TV show, which, okay. And then...
You sang the same song over and over, but okay.
And then you have a hat trick in the second period after the Predators go down 4-1. They pull Pekka Rinne, put in Jussi Saros, and boom, something just changes there. Mm-hmm. So, Daniel, this is your first NHL experience in Nashville. After that first period, what's going through your mind as you're watching this game and as it develops?
Well, the thing that's bizarre is, I mean, the week that I've come off of with the Milwaukee Admirals, none of it actually fazed me, just because you had, in the Admirals past week, a opening goal allowed on the very first shift. And that basically happened last night.
Yep.
So I was like, all right, here we go again. I guess it's just me then. And from there, though, the second period, there was more action in that second period than you get in most games in general. I mean, I've gone from down 4-1. You have the goalie change. You have the Johansson fight. I was blown away by their ability to come back. And it's one of those things where you look at that. Why can't they play like that for 60 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
They have the ability.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about with my friend that I sat with at the game last night. It was like, it's fascinating because you watch a first period that way and you watch a team go down 4-1. And when you watch them come back and play the way that they did, I don't understand how you can't pull that for 40, 60 minutes some nights, you know, some game nights. And it's a little bit frustrating, I'm not going to lie, you know, when you're watching that as a fan and thinking, you see it there, it's in front of you, they're fully capable of it, so why couldn't that have been a full game effort?
It's a consistency thing that it's been all season, consistency issues, and as every fan has seen that.
Well, yeah, but imagine if they could pull that off.
Now, let's look at the positives. Mm-hmm. Some positives. I mean,
it's a great second period.
A great second period. So Philip Forsberg recorded his third hat trick of his career, and it's the 30th in franchise history. And now, okay, here is the debate that was going on. The NHL tweeted out that it was a natural hat trick. Mm-hmm. Which apparently most people think of natural hat trick as three consecutive goals scored by the same player without any other player, no matter the team scoring. Mm-hmm. That's the definition I think most people have grown up with. Whereas there is a secondary definition of natural hat trick where it's three goals by the same player in a period. That's stupid.
The problem is, if that's your statistic and it's based around a fact, you can't just throw in a secondary.
saying the
definition of blue, all right, it's this color, and the secondary definition of it is green. No, it's not.
It threw me off.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. Okay, I accept that is a secondary definition, okay, but that is not how I see it. Because a natural hat trick is something special that you did three in a row with no one else.
It's consecutive goals.
There.
Nothing
Call it something else. Call it something else, because you're varying the definitions there.
I was wanting it to be called like a bowler or top hat trick. Something different.
So another positive, PK Subban, whom some people still have not accepted the fact that he is part of the Nashville Predators. Again, he was traded to Nashville for Shea Weber, and PK Subban is a member of the Nashville Predators. PK Subban's just he's here.
He's a Predator.
He's a Predator. So he extended his assist streak to 4 games. It's the longest by a Predators player this season, and recorded his 4th multi-point game in his last 6 contests. So since coming back from injury, he's continuing to get better and better, and is still apparently not at 100%. So it's good to see him contributing that way. Now, it's still not doing enough for some people. I don't understand that, because he has a point streak going on right now, and that's what you want, is him contributing in certain ways, and especially the way he celebrated after that was initially waved off. He celebrated, then turned around and went, "What?" But then the officials got it right, because the goaltender was not almost killed in the crease. I mean, I'm so glad.
I'm very happy.
I'm so glad that Brian Elliott survived that tragic accident.
I might not have ever gone to another Nashville Predators game again.
I know, because he was almost killed out of the crease. Just like Devin Dubnyk. Yeah, when Devin Dubnyk's almost killed.
That was tragic.
Tragic things there. But so now flip this right. Yusei Saros, you looked pretty good as well, especially coming in relief like that when you're not warm. You've been sitting on the bench for at least a period and a few minutes of a game. Mm-hmm. You're cold. And he comes right in and boom, has to make a stellar glove save right off the bat. And I'm sure you're used to seeing that in Milwaukee, Daniel.
I got the real good sense of how good that guy is when earlier in the year he had a little spell up here, wasn't getting games or anything like that, comes right back. We had a game in Cleveland after an extended time out of the lineup. Goes down, all he does is get a shutout immediately in Cleveland. So he's not... That's how mature he is as a player, for him to just go right into game mode. He's that sharp, and I think he's just that competitive all the time. So it wasn't a matter of – it probably helped, obviously, to get the kind of shots he did right away. I think any goalie would prefer to get – give me something early, rather than if he were to come in not seeing a shot for a minute or two, you get that action. But you see how good and how quick that kid is. He's incredible.
And we'll address a little bit more of that as we go on. So the Colorado Avalanche are coming in Thursday night. They are the worst team out there right now in the league, and it's just been bad for Colorado this season. So obviously you're expecting them to be sellers, even though they really haven't been yet. They were eliminated officially from President's Trophy contention. Just in case they were wondering. But their road record's 9-19-1. So this is one of those games where the Predators are going to have to come out and completely just dominate. They have to dominate Colorado and give that assertive win just for the team, for the fans, for everyone that's following this team. It can't be a close game. This is a game that they should win by 4 goals. And they have to do that because of the way they lost the game on Tuesday and because of the way they've lost other games. Colorado is one of those must-win games just simply because you better. You just better win. I can't see anything other than that besides... It's Colorado. You better win this game, especially Nashville with the talent they have. No matter who starts in net, and especially the team is pretty much healthy, aside from a few, they got to win. They just have to win.
They do. I'm with you, Justin. Especially like you watch post-game interviews, you know, and the guys, they're glad that they had a great period, but they're also frustrated. And a lot of them are saying they should have won that one. And so I think that they have to go into Thursday with that mentality.
Absolutely. So, okay, coming up next, we're going to talk to Mark Moser. He is the radio play-by-play voice of the Colorado Avalanche, to get his take on what's really going on with that team, how they are adjusting with the challenges that they're facing this season. That's coming up next here on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. USA Saros, exempt from expansion draft, and it's Pekka Rinne, not Pekki Rinne. This is Justin Bradford, along with Glenn Blackwell, and special guest host Daniel Lavender of Admirals Roundtable here in the studio. And on the line with us right now, we have Mark Moser, the play-by-play voice for the Colorado Avalanche. Mark, welcome to the show. Hello, Mark.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Hey, doing all right. How are you?
Doing good. Just enjoying Nashville, as I always do. I'm kind of predictable down here. I head to Roberts, and I'll be there in just a little bit. I'm kind of impartial to the Don Kelly band, so that's kind of what I do when I come to Nashville. I call it an early night and then head to the rink in the morning.
Well, and now we know where to come find you to party.
Exactly right.
Well,
I'll tell you what's funny, though, is that the way the schedule makers work, we haven't had a day off in Nashville in quite some time. And the first time I ever came to Nashville, oh, goodness gracious, somebody almost got smoked in the middle of Broadway. But it's crazy. The first time I ever came to Nashville was 1998 for the National Hockey League meetings when the Preds were first underway, and just been in love with this town ever since. So just such a great city. It's become such a fantastic hockey town. It's very exciting to see hockey so strong and so vibrant here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Well, those are very good words. I know we all appreciate that here, Mark, and just glad that you always enjoy your time here in the city. We know there's a lot of players that do too, because boy, those really tend to hit up the trade rumors just because a player said they enjoy a city.
Right, exactly.
So I guess we'll start off just with this. It's been obviously a challenging season for the Colorado Avalanche. A lot of growing pains. There's a lot of youth in the team right now. What are you seeing in terms of anything that's positive for what this team can take away from the way the season's going for them?
Well, I think when you have a season like this, that's what you look for. You look for the positives, right? What can you look forward to the future? And one of the big negatives right now, guys, is that the Avs just lost one of the positives, and Nikita Zadorov. He was one of the big pieces acquired from Buffalo in the Ryan O'Reilly trade a couple of years ago. And in practice a couple of days ago, he snapped his ankle right at the end of practice. It kind of tangled up with another star rookie, Mikko Rantanen, who I'll talk about momentarily. And fell over backwards. And you know, when you've got 2 6-foot-4, 6-foot-5, 225, 230-pound bodies falling over each other, bad things can happen. And that's exactly what happened to Nikita Zadorov. So he broke his ankle, will not require surgery, but he's lost for the season. But the positive about him was that his game has really come on. He certainly has increased his game since the minute he came aboard when Eric Johnson got hurt. And really, I thought, started to blossom on the back end. And you know, I've talked to many guys around the league in the last 20 years. You know, when do you know what you've got out of defenseman? You know, career game 300, career game number 400. Zadorov's not even there yet, and we've seen his increase, and we've seen his hitting pick up. He, you know, set a new career high in hits this season. So to have him out now with that broken ankle is a real bummer for the rest of the year. Yeah, I know there's only 7 weeks left in the season, but his progress was enough that you want to see more of it. And then let him have a nice offseason and get ready for next year. So you know, they found a guy I think who's going to be strong in the blue line for many years to come. That's a negative. That was a positive. But the other positive is Mikko Rantanen. The Avs is a number 10 overall pick a couple of years back. This is his rookie season, and he's got 8 goals in his last 13 games, really starting to figure things out after 6 goals in the first 40 games. Big, strong, smooth skating fin with great hands on the wing. So he's a very positive thing that you can look at for the future of this team.
Now, Mark, I had a chance to actually watch Rantanen last season in the American Hockey League when he was with the San Antonio Rampage.
Right,
you can certainly
exactly
see the talents that he has, but what are you seeing in his sort of evolution? This is his first real extended run with the National Hockey League team.
Yeah, and as you would know, I mean, last year was his first year on the North American ice sheet, you know, coming over to the smaller sheet, and I think that you have to figure out, you know, where you can go and what you can do on the smaller ice sheet. And I'll say this, I mean, playing in the American Hockey League is difficult. You've got men down there who want jobs and guys who are close to the NHL and guys who are fighting every single night and very good hockey players. And so it's difficult. And so when he was an all-star and a rookie of the year in that league, it made me feel really good about his progress. And then you come up to the National Hockey League where you're playing against the very best in the world. And so, you know, it's going to take some adjustment there too. But I tell you what I see him figuring things out in terms of where to go on the ice, how to score, you know, how to be effective, what you can and cannot get away with against the very elite defenseman in the National Hockey League. And for most of the season, he's been skating with Nathan MacKinnon. The past couple of games, he's been skating with Matt Duchene, and he's still facing top pairs every single night. And he's, you know, in top other lines every single night. And he's really showing well for himself. So I just think he's figuring the game out at this level at the age of 20. And that's exciting, you know. I mean, because you start to project him down the road, you know, what's he going to be when he's 22, 24, 27 years of age? And I think he's going to be a really, really good player. So it's just fun to watch his progress, how to figure things out. Made a great play last night in a loss to the LA Kings, but he poke-checked none other than superstar defenseman Drew Doughty, just right at the Kings' blue line, or just outside the blue line, raced in for a little bit of a breakaway, and then wrapped it home past Peter Budaj for the game's only goal for the Avalanche anyway, and it was just a thing of beauty. So it makes you feel good about the future for him.
And looking at where Colorado's at right now, this is switching gears a little bit, in a tough spot, 16-39-3. Playoffs are out of the question at this point, a lot of trade talk, rumors. What is the presence like in the locker room at a point like this for a team?
You know, that's a great question. And it's not, I guess you would think that it's really bad and guys are down every day, but they're really not. You know, I mean, I think that part of this, of the year in a season like this is when you have Semyon Varlamov, who had a really wonky groin. He was kind of in and out of the lineup and not very consistent. And that groin was just bothering him. And it has been bothering him for a couple of years. So finally the Avs say, all right, we're going to shut you down. And he has surgery on it. So you lost your number one. You lost your top defenseman in Eric Johnson back on December 3rd. You know, the Avs were 9-9 going into this one homestand at the end of November and had a couple of tough losses and then got hammered, actually, by the Nashville Predators during that homestand. And then Eric Johnson had his leg blown up, and he should return Saturday night at home against the Buffalo Sabres, although he is on this road trip. So I think guys sort of, they sort of reconciled with themselves where they were back, I think, in December, you know, and they understand what the situation is like and what the season is like. And I think that right now perhaps some guys are waiting for the other shoe to drop. Am I going to be traded? Am I going to stay in Colorado? But guys aren't down at all. They're not. It's not a woe is me type of attitude. I mean, they're still out there trying. They're still out there, you know, being professional and doing their job. But they are disappointed. And I think none other than the captain, Gabe Landeskog, would tell you that, you know, seasons like this, you never know what can happen in terms of guys being dealt or changes being made, that everybody's susceptible to that. So I think guys a little bit are waiting for that, the trade deadline 1 week from today. But at the same time, I think that, you know, they want to be pros, you know, and they're disappointed with how things have gone, especially, you know, after, you know, 80-plus points the past couple of years and 112 points 3 years ago. You know, they want to try to figure things out. So hopefully they will in the future. But they're trying to remain upbeat as much as they can.
Well, that's always good to hear. And, folks, this is Mark Mosier. He is the radio play-by-play voice for the Colorado Avalanche. And, Mark, looking at something here, it's a Nashville connectionist organization-wise. Jeremy Smith made his first NHL appearance in net. He was a draft pick of the Nashville Predators. Didn't get to make the big show with the organization there, but obviously familiar in Milwaukee. What did you see out of him? And obviously it's one of those seasons, too, where a lot of guys are going to get looks and opportunities with the way the season's gone for Colorado. That's obviously a positive right there for Jeremy Smith, correct?
Yeah, absolutely it is. Well, you know, the thing about him, and here's I don't know what Jeremy's future holds, but here's what I like about it. I mean, he's a guy who, again, made his NHL debut against the New Jersey Devils, you know, on the last road trip back east. And I thought he played a good game. In fact, Coach Bednar said he was the best player on the ice by a mile, and he might have been. But you know what's good for him in a situation like this? I don't know what his future holds. You know, is he going to be a minor leaguer? Will he get a shot with the Avs? I thought he looked good in the preseason. But right now he's collecting an NHL paycheck, and that's cool. You know, I mean, for these guys, guys who at the age of 27 still have not made the show, and then they finally do and get an opportunity to play, I think that's a really cool thing. You know, a guy that he gets to come up and make some NHL money and pocket that a little bit, but get an experience as to what it's like. So we'll see. I think the guy that we're looking at right now is Spencer Martin down with the San Antonio Rampage. He's a guy that I think the Avs are really high on in the future. They want him to play as much as possible down in San Antonio. So while Calvin Pickard, the backup, has become the number one guy with Semyon Varlamov on the shelf, Jeremy Smith up here practicing with a big club every single day, collecting an NHL paycheck. And I'll tell you this, he's a great dude. He's a really good dude. He's got a great head on his shoulders. And he's the guy who goes out there and gives it his all every single time.
And that's something we've always heard just about him, that just the mindset of Jeremy Smith, what it's been like for him, too. So it's great to hear that.
Right.
Great to hear. Folks in Nashville that have followed the Predators for a long time, followed the organization, obviously like to hear that. So one last question before I have to let you go so you can get, you know, back to your Broadway show there down in downtown. So obviously one of those things that keeps getting talked about with the Colorado Avalanche is defense, and that's what they really need right now. Is it something that you think the Avalanche, in terms of addressing that need, are going to have to do that in the draft and then wait? Or is it something you think they can accomplish in free agency?
Well, you guys are full of great questions, though. I tell you what, this is amazing. As you guys know, and I've seen this for years, and it's harder now than ever before. It's so hard to pry defensemen away from teams. I mean, which is why when you send a Seth Jones to Columbus for a Johansson, you're like, oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe that deal went down. You know, I mean, because but the good thing about Nashville is you know you've had a plethora of terrific defensemen here. You know, and they've done a great job. You have to draft and develop defensemen in the NHL because teams just do not want to give them up. I mean, it's a king's ransom to try and get a guy. Now, the Avs have some pieces up front that they could use and acquire assets on the back end. So I think it really is kind of a hand-in-hand story. I mean, Joe Sakic is on record, though, as saying, hey, listen, to give up one of our guys up front, it's going to have to be a deal that we simply cannot refuse, a terrific deal. And they certainly have sniffed around, I'm sure, at a lot of good young defensemen around the National Hockey League, but it's going to take a Herculean deal to try and get something done to move one of their big guns. They have a couple of guys in the system that I like that I think are going to be good players, and that's where it's at nowadays. I mean, you have to draft and develop defensemen, and it's the position in the league that takes the longest to develop. So, when's it going to be, full on the back end for this Avalanche team? I guess we'll wait and see. They might want to plug in a couple of free agents for now, but I think that everybody realizes if you want to have long-term success, you've got to draft and develop your own guys, bring them through the system, be patient with them, let them mature, and then become National Hockey League players because it's such a demanding position. Everybody wants a Drew Doughty. Everybody wants a Subban or a Yossi or guys of this nature who are just phenomenal players. But those guys are rare. I mean, they're very rare and very hard to find. So it's going to have to be a drafting game for sure. But for this Colorado Avalanche squad, they do have pieces, and perhaps they can use one of those to acquire a guy at the deadline or at the very least this summertime.
Well, Mark, you've quickly become one of my favorite guests just with your absolute knowledge of everything and just – complimenting us on our questions. I'll send you your check in the mail.
Sounds good. Well, you guys have asked great questions and stuff that I think about all the time, so I'm glad to expound on it for you.
Well, we absolutely appreciate it. Now, go back to Robert's Western World, and we'll see you tomorrow night in the arena.
That sounds great. Can't wait to get over here. Again, guys, like I said, it's just great to see how awesome this city has embraced this hockey club. I just watched the Vince Gill thing the other day when he was in the team store being an employee. I thought that was outstanding. So always great to be in Nashville. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Folks, that is Mark Mosier. He is the radio play-by-play voice for the Colorado Avalanche. He's awesome.
Let's go down to Robert.
He is awesome. Oh, my gosh. I got to make sure to go shake his hand.
I just became an Avalanche fan in a small way.
No, he's great. So knowledgeable of the game there. All right, well, coming up next, you can follow him at Radio Mosier also. He's got some insight on there as well. So up next, Daniel, we're going to talk to you specifically about the Predators prospects, Milwaukee Admirals, a little bit of everything about your experience in Nashville so far. That's coming up next here on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Yusuf Saros is exempt from the expansion draft, and it's Ryan Johansson, not Ryan Johansson. This is Justin Bradford, along with Glenn Blackwell, and special guest host Daniel Lavender, who we're actually going to interview this segment. So I hope you're ready. Yes. Good cop, good
we
cop,
like
bad
hearing
cop.
You talk.
It's Yusuf Saros.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yusuf Saros.
Yusuf.
So, I mean, we're getting clarification here that it is Yusuf Saros, because Mr. Lavender I spent plenty of time with Yusuf Saros, right?
But, yeah, if you listen to him correctly at dinner, it's Saros.
Saros.
Yusuf
Saros.
There you go.
There.
But if you ask him what it is, I think he's just so darn nice that every answer is the right answer.
So,
it's whatever you say.
Yusuf, do you pronounce your name Pekka-Rinne?
Yes. Yes, I think that's the right answer, yes.
So Daniel, let's go ahead and start off here. First of all, first NHL experience. Now, you were here back in the summer for development camp. You got to see a lot of familiar faces, everything like that. But now here, game-wise experience, what has just been the difference for you, AHL to NHL, in terms of the game atmosphere, the way the game plays out, speed of the game, everything like that?
Well, I think anyone who's been able to work behind the curtains, you have a newfound appreciation for just the behind the curtains, that's the amount of organization that goes on for an event that big. And in American Hockey League, it's still a really big process to get everything in order to make it the entertainment atmosphere that it is. Walking into the Bridgestone yesterday and seeing some of the inner workings of that building, you're sort of taken aback by how huge an NHL event is for every aspect of it. I mean, whether it be the food and concessions or stuff for the media people, radio people, I mean, it's a massive ordeal to get everything in order to work perfectly. And to take in that event, it was really cool because, I mean, the last time I was at an NHL game, I was there as a fan. So that was just cool to sort of sit back and see all the inner workings of what an NHL game is.
So what was it like for you? Because some of these faces are very familiar in Milwaukee, and you've interviewed them time and time again, spent time in the locker room there. What was it like for you to go back there, talk to them, in an NHL locker room after an NHL game.
What's actually pretty funny is, like, I probably saw more familiar faces yesterday than I would have in rookie development camp. Just because that's the great thing about the Nashville Predators organization is they build from within probably as good as anyone. So when you're seeing guys like Watson, Sissons, even seeing Mika at the end of last night's game, it's all this sort of like a, oh, hey, what are you doing here kind of atmosphere. And got that a bit from Sissons, got a bit of a laugh out of seeing Fiala, because it's like, yeah, we were just talking like last week, and then there he is. So, you know, the thing that's so great about that is, I mean, in the American Hockey League, everyone's there battling to get to this sort of a spot, and everyone's chasing that dream. And you look at a guy like Mike Liambus. I mean, some guys, and Mark Van Giller for that matter, sometimes all it takes is getting that one and only NHL game, and it could be a dream come true for these guys. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for them to finally get here, even if they're a high draft pick or anything like that, to watch that process and then see them where they are now, it's a really great feeling, like even as a person on the outside as media, because you've seen them work so hard to get where they are.
And again, this is Daniel Lavender. He's with Admirals Roundtable. That covers the Milwaukee Admirals. For those of you that may be listening and not know, Milwaukee Admirals are the AHL affiliate, the American Hockey League affiliate of the Nashville Predators. So a lot of the prospects coming through there. And one of the prospects I want to talk about is Vladislav Kamenev. And a lot of people are really wanting to see him. He's had his debut, but right now he's at 38 points in 49 games for the Milwaukee Admirals. So he's having a very fantastic year for Milwaukee. How close is he to making that jump? And the reason why I ask that is because so many people are on the whole train of thought again of, boy, the Predators just need another big-time center, and that's the missing piece.
Well, the problem is, people immediately assume that he is going to just come in and do what he did in the American Hockey League right away. And he's a kid who last season showed up as a teenager in a country where no one even spoke his language. So there is so much that came in with not just playing the game last year, just learning day-to-day life as a young adult. So he has a lot of those question marks answered. And this year he's come to grips a lot more with the game. It seems like he's taking the training wheels off. He's being able to push himself more, and he's being a bit more aggressive with his play. And there's still lots of nights where, and even stretches where you can see that there's problems with his game and some of the decisions he makes, but he's young, and that's the reason why there's an American Hockey League, for him to do that, learn it, and then get better. And even if Kamenev were to be in the American Hockey League at the start of next year, that's not a bad thing, because he's still growing, and you want someone to really make strides at that level. So when they are introduced, like Pontus Åberg, for example, this past call-up that he was in, he looked better than I've ever seen him. And it's just a matter of comfort and getting those games in. And Kamenev's getting more and more minutes, more and more opportunities to play, penalty kill, power play. And this year he's starting to really excel and make great strides. He's looked way better already this year than last year.
And one of those things, we bring it up pretty much every time, but adjustments are always having to be made in the AHL, whether it's because of call-ups or trades or anything like that. So that's always the challenge that the coaching staff faces, that the players themselves face because of team chemistry and everything like that. What is it in the team log? Because I've spoken with you about this personally. When a trade happens, when a team player that maybe to folks in Nashville, that player may not mean a lot to them because they haven't followed them, or maybe they just don't know.
You're talking about Felix Girard, aren't you?
I am, yes. And well, and it's not just him. There's so many other times, too, that it's happened in the season where a player all of a sudden is away, and at least walking in an interesting position, interesting spot, because they have to make up for that loss in some form or fashion. What is the attitude like in the locker room, and how does the team adjust for that? And what do you witness the team having to do to adjust to some of these things to make sure that they still on the right track to go in the Calder Cup?
Well, I tell you, I'm always just taken back by how difficult it must be to be an American Hockey League and ECHL coach, because of the amount of shuffling that goes on daily. Not just like, all right, we have a big game coming up. All right, you need both of our best players. All right. It becomes that kind of thing. I think we're well over 40 players played for us this season alone, and we probably have crept past where we were last season in total. And really felt that in December, and that's where a lot of inconsistencies as far as the Admirals season has gone on. But you have a guy like Dean Evason, Stan Drulia, Scott Ford, who really preach it doesn't matter who's up, who's down. When you're in the lineup, you show up and you play and you compete. And I mean, having a guy like him who really preaches that consistency, he's a real player's coach, I think it really helps sort of get the group together. And we have an amazing leadership group in Milwaukee this year, probably the best I've seen, with a guy like Trevor Smith, who's the captain. You have other great veteran minds. I know he's hurt at the moment, but Adam Party is around in Milwaukee. He's almost been like a bit of a coach in training, if you will, while he's recovering an injury. So there's lots of great voices. There's lots of great people to bridge the gap, like having a guy like Derek Army come in, who isn't even with our ECHL affiliate. He was a PTO signing from the Wheeling Nailers. And you'd never have known that there was a transitional hiccup there for the way that he was introduced and just welcomed right into the team.
All right, so again, this is Daniel Lavender. One more question, because obviously we talk about Auberg and Kamenev and Saros a lot here, but in terms of other prospects that are part of the Nashville system that are playing Milwaukee, is there a name that kind of stands out to you of, hey, maybe not this season, but next season you better watch out for him because he could make his way up to be a call-up next year?
Well, there's two that come out to mind. One of them Nashville should be familiar with already, and is Frederick Gaudreau. And another one who isn't even signed under an NHL contract is Jimmy Olenny, who's a defenseman. And they're part of that great French fry group that are there. But it's part of a term of affection, but it's also those guys are the legitimate first to the rank, last off the rank type of guys who never stop working. And Freddie Gaudreau, I've never seen a guy work harder in practices. He takes everything to heart. He works so tremendously hard. And he's a guy who should be on Nashville's radar, like a lower line type of forward, because he can do all aspects of the game well. He's been more kicked to the wing this year. But last year, where he started to take off and earn his AHL All-Star nod and an NHL contract from the Predators, was when he was actually replacing Sissons in the lineup at center and actually doing better than Colton Sissons at the time.
Ooh.
And Jimmy Olenny is a guy who, when you go through the plethora of some of the Admirals' like top defensemen who they had, like the veteran guys, you go from Scott Ford to Joe Piscula to Betetto took that spot. Olney's been that guy and has really been that guy for the last 2 years, and he is still, I think, only about 23 years old, and he might be the older type of guy that is of that group. So he's such an incredibly well-balanced type of player. He might not do the offensive numbers all that much, but he certainly skates well enough to be a National Predators defenseman and is easily, I think, our best defensive defenseman, and someone who I'm surprised after last season alone didn't get an NHL contract.
All right, well, there you have it. Lots of information, as always, but here in studio with this Daniel Lavender.
It's fancy.
It's fancy.
It's fancy in here.
It's fancy. All right, well, coming up next, we're going to have more with Daniel Lavender, answer the Twitter questions that were earlier submitted. And, before I forget, you can follow him at Ads Roundtable on Twitter. Lots of information there at AdmiralsRoundtable.com. Lots of catching up stories with Victor Arvidsson, Austin Watson, Colton Sissons, all these players that have recently been in Milwaukee. Great interviews there by Daniel with a lot of these players there. So make sure you go visit AdmiralsRoundtable.com for all those things. So coming up next, Twitter questions. We're going to answer those lots of fun topics, I tell you what, here on Penalty Box Radio, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Penalty Box Radio, powered by E610 Athletes. Eustace Saros is exempt from the expansion draft, and Yannick Weber, the Weber spelled with one B, not two. Make sure you get that right. This is Justin Bradford, along with Glenn Blackwell and special guest host Daniel Lavender. Big Ben has been out. He is still out with a concussion, so we wish him well.
I know.
Is that the reason why I was called up? Is he on long-term IR?
Long time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Long-term IR, LTIR for Big Ben. Right. So we have our guest host here.
No one ever told me I was on a two-way contract.
Well,
you are now. News.
Contract.
Pleasant surprise.
Contract. What contract?
That's a good question. That's the real story.
Is it notarized?
I got you, Daniel.
Or was it Nash?
Yeah.
It was made in crayon.
All right. So we are going to answer some Twitter questions right now. We have some. Okay. Here, this one's from at 501 Broadway. Should Laviolette look at switching up the defensive pairings? Gosh, that's one of those questions. Yeah, I'm hearing that a lot as well. I really, if it comes to anything, I really would like to see Ellis and Ekholm back together because of the chemistry that they have had the past two seasons together. Now, what does it mean for the others? Subban and Yossi, and then Weber and Irwin. And I think Irwin has asserted himself to be strong enough to be able to handle not being with a Yossi or an Ellis or an Ekholm or a Subban, that he could be a decent pairing with Weber. See, try it out.
It would work, I think.
See what happens.
And really, when it boils down to it, you want a stable top four, I think. Especially that's what you see mainly in the playoffs is they end up just rolling out the top four D, and that's as good as you're going to get.
And the bottom pairing plays like 5-6 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Exactly.
That's
fine.
All right. From at Murph Preds, 92-83-12. So Johansson, Fiddler, Fisher all have a 4% higher face-off percentage. Why does Kelly take the OT draw when all three other centers are better off on the draw?
Shrug emoji.
No, if anything, I would liken this to matchups. And if anything, it comes down to what the coaching staff saw as a better matchup. Is that saying it was the right decision? No, I don't know. Obviously, probably not. But is the matchup decision. That, especially when it comes to overtime, things like that, it's always about matchups. So that's what I'm going to liken it to. I have no idea. You would think it would be someone maybe like Fisher out there, more defensive style forward. In a situation like that, but he doesn't have as much speed as Yarncroke either. That's just what I would liken it to.
I'll say that your guess is as good as mine because I actually gave a shrug. Like, I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
As much as 3-3 I see it, it's like I understand the speed element, but at the same time, getting the puck first is everything.
Yeah.
All right, so we have at J. Levi D., why is general manager so secretive about trades? Why can't he just come out and say, hey, we offered X for Y, they say no? Being a general manager is a very secretive way because you don't want to show your hand. And so if you say you offer this for that, and then, for instance, you try to offer that for this to another general manager,
it's going to come back around.
And it already comes back around. They're always talking. They're always knowing. Scouts know. All the assistant general managers know. People know what's being discussed out there. And so it's just like you don't want your elected leaders to come out and say everything either. You want to be secretive, especially when it comes to war. We're going to go to this location here and exactly right here and do this. So you can't do that in a trade either, or else you're showing your hand.
You have something substantial. Yeah, right.
I just liken it to if, say, David Poile had a Twitter account and he just went out and went, oh, just made a deal with the Washington Capitals, .. just you wait, happy face. That just doesn't make sense.
I don't know if they're going to pull that again. But we do have a caller on the line. It's Ben from Orlando?
Huh?
Yeah, I listened to you guys online.
Oh, all right. Well,
all
welcome.
All the way from the sunny sunshine state.
How's it going?
Is it sunny there?
How's it going, Big Ben?
Oh, hey, yeah, it is Big Ben. It is cold and rainy here, actually.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. But it is Orlando.
That's also true.
And so I'm just wondering, I'm kind of out of touch now. With that loss last night, is UC Soros and going to end up in Vegas?
Okay, we're going to go and cut the line there.
I'm going back to Milwaukee, bye.
We're
going to
hang you up and let you listen.
Yeah, we're going to hang you up and let you listen, Ben. Yeah, thanks for nothing. There's always one. Do you have a real question?
And it's one of our own.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure everyone in Nashville knows that this weekend is the Heroes Cup. Out at Fordyce Center, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, there's over 20 public safety teams coming in from all over North America. There's Canadian teams as well as teams from all over that'll be coming in. So if you get a chance, it's free. Go cheer on those public safety teams. You should see our fancy new Firehouse Hockey banner will be hanging up out there. And stick around after the Preds game on Saturday because the Nashville Fire Department is going to be doing a charity game with the New York Heroes, which is comprised of people from New York City, including FDNY.
All right. No, that's great. Always great event, especially with Firehouse Hockey involved. Ben, thanks for sharing that information.
Hey, guys. Thanks.
Well, safe travels to you, and hopefully get sunny down there, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely. So make sure you go check that out. Always great tournaments going on to support the local heroes, especially in hockey. I mean, it's two good things combined. You can't beat that. So more information, firehousehockey.com or .org. Both of them go to the same place, which is even better. All right. So lots of questions about overtime. Let's go ahead and address this. The Predators have the worst 3-on-3 overtime record. How many wins do they have? 3. How many losses do they have? 18. It is rough. Now, Anaheim and Minnesota are right there, too. Minnesota 4-13 and Anaheim 6-15. But it shows the Predators have a lot to work on. And everybody says, well, what can they work on? I don't know. I'm not a coach. Mm-hmm. What I'd like to see is them be more aggressive and not play zone and not shy away from the puck, attack the puck. Because we've said it before, when you attack, well, hey, you may be giving up something and you get a goal, but you're trying. And hey, you tried is better than just sitting back and wait for them to attack.
And just waiting for it, wait to come for it, to,
especially
yeah.
when you play the zone. If you, I mean, it's tough to do basketball terms, but man to man, maybe not so much. But be aggressive on the puck, mm-hmm. force a turnover, force the opposition to make a play instead of waiting for them to shoot. Because when you have a talented player shoot, they're going to find the back of the net, just and it happens every it happened, freaking yeah. time.
And what was bizarre in particular last night is it effectively looked like it was how you would set up for a 5-on-3 penalty kill.
Right? Yeah.
It's not 5-on-3. It's 3-on.
Yeah.
Three.
I know it absolutely is. It's a little rough. It was a little rough to watch that. Okay, so we have another one at JRick321. What should this team do at the deadline, and why something's just not clicking this year? At the deadline, I think it's been said by multiple people right now, I'd honestly rather not see them do anything. Unless something falls into their lap, and I know you've said this before on Twitter as well, Daniel, don't do anything to mess it up. You're going to muck it up a little bit if you just add a piece in there and hope it's going to just come together, just
yeah.
to do something,
yeah.
unless it's a really good proposition, which it's not going to be because of the expansion draft coming up.
Yeah, and with the name like Duchesne being thrown out ad nauseum.
All the time.
Ad nauseum. It's, unless their sort of asking price goes down, which, why would
Oh,
it?
No, yeah.
There's no reason to really, there's nothing that's going to do anything to make them better than what they already could be, as long as the National Predators players start playing like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the biggest trade acquisition of all, if their own players start playing up to their own abilities.
Yeah, the talent's absolutely there. All right, we do have to get going. Sorry if we couldn't get your questions. I'll make sure to answer those on the Twitter itself there. So thanks for tuning in. All episodes are on PenaltyToBoxRadio.com. Follow us on social media at PenaltyToBoxRadio everywhere. I'm at Justin B. Bradford. Thank you again to Daniel Lavender of Admirals Roundtable for joining us in studio, and obviously thank you to Glenn Blackwell for being our co-host as always, and to Big Ben for calling in there with a Firehouse Hockey shout out. This is Justin Bradford. Thanks for tuning in to Penalty Box Radio on ESPN 102.5 The Game.